Hello everyone and welcome to the Constructive Criticism Network. This network is here to help you improve at Magic the Gathering at every level. From Pauper Leagues to Top 1000 Mythic, we've got you covered. If you want to hear the entire network, head on over to our sponsor at PureMTGO.com, where you can hear each and every show, each and every week, and check out their sponsor, MTGO Traders, and tell them that the CCMTG Network sent you. Now sit back, enjoy the show. From YouTube, podcasts, and more, here's this week's episode from ConstructiveCriticism.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Kling.
Hey, how's it going? Don't really feel like a co-host anymore, but, you know.
I mean, it's also not an episode. Yeah, it's also not an episode of Constructive Criticism. I just, you know.
Yeah.
I missed saying it, man. I missed saying it. You know, that's just, you know, words I've said a lot in my life. It's good to have you on, Matt. This is the weekly deck tech here on the Constructive Criticism YouTube channel and on the Constructive Criticism podcast feed. I'm Spencer. I'm joined by former Constructive Criticism co-host Matt Kling. And today we are doing a deck tech on Boros Winota. Matt, how many days have you played Magic in the last 2 months? So in 2 days, you hit Mythic. You're playing a deck that you mostly, you know, started from scratch, looked at some other lists, and then, you know, you told me how you were doing. I decided to pick up this deck, you know, had a, you know, pretty good record before the SCG yesterday. I decided to play it in the SCG, I think they're called Opens, yeah. I don't know, whatever it is, the thing you have to 4-0. And, you know, was able to go 3-1, so I've got, you know, above a 70% win percentage with the deck. And so I was like, you know what? This deck's good enough. Let's have Matt on and chat about it. So,
yeah. I think to say that I looked at other deck lists is pretty disingenuous. Like, I played some of the Mardu Winota deck prior.
Sure.
But as far as Boros, I just didn't assume that I was going to be able to find a list, so.
So most of this is just you.
Yeah, no, I just did, like, some searches on Arena, even. I didn't even use Scryfall for the most part. I just,
nice.
You know, typed in humans and tokens.
Well, let's pull up kind of what the list is. So we have 4 Selfless Savior, 4 Grim Initiate, 4 Raise the Alarm, 2 Season Hollowblade, 4 Tithe Taker, 2 Tajik Legion's Edge, 4 Legion Warboss, 4 Basari's Lieutenant. Is that how you say that?
That sounds right to me.
Yeah. 4 Winota, 2 Hakdos, 3 Loxodon Smiter, and I believe we have 23 lands with 8 Plains, 7 Mountain, 4 Sacred Foundry, 4 Temple of Triumph. And we will get to the sideboard a little bit later. But man, I want to talk about a few things about this deck and kind of what led me to play it this weekend. And then also, like, what I liked about it when you shifted. Because, let's be honest, it's pretty hard to get me to play a Boros deck. Like, just a white deck in general, right? Like, I just...
Mm.
And the thing about this deck that really interests me is I already thought mono red was good, and you know, the mono red decks that were doing well were basically not playing creatures. And so, you know, you also see the power of Winota, like you see what's going on with the creature, and you're like, okay, well, can I just play an aggressive deck that plays Winota if we're not going to play spells? Like, is that a thing that I can do? Is that kind of where your head was at, or did you just want to play Winota?
So I think a lot of it was that I just wanted to play Winota. Like, it's just honestly a lot of fun. And, given that I'm not as invested in Magic these days, that was kind of a big selling point for me. I do think that it's particularly good in the metagame because of all the Sultai. And especially, like, Sultai tech for the mirror. So, I like...
Yeah.
Winota just gives you a lot of free wins in that way.
Yeah, and I think that between the two of us, we're over 80% against Sultai with the deck in our matches.
I'm sure.
And you know, that's a pretty good place to be. I mean, you said, I think in your first, was it 17 matches, only 5 of them or something weren't against Sultai on ladder?
I said 40, my first 40 matches.
Oh.
I don't know if that's, I mean, I think that that's probably pretty close to accurate. I mean, it might be a slight exaggeration, but not that much.
that's still pretty, it's pretty funny still. Yeah. So, I want to talk about kind of this deck and what it's trying to do. you know, before we do that though, I want to talk about the key land in this deck, and it's usually when we talk about the key land, it's like a land that is, you know, it's something to call out. It's like a spell land that's doing something specific for the deck. And while this land is doing it, and I believe it's worth the price, I want to talk about Temple of Tramp. Because this Scryland is one of the best and worst lands in the deck. Because,
yeah, definitely.
Go ahead.
Yeah, being the only tap land is definitely a problem sometimes. But you're also a deck that is more analogous to a combo deck than an aggro deck, so like the Scrys are actually very valuable.
Yeah, I was really surprised at like just how often I bottomed and was really happy. Mm-hmm. Like, you bottom so much. And if you think about just the power that comes with how often you want to bottom with this card, it's like, well, okay, if I'm bottoming with this card this much off of this Scry, it's probably worth the tap land. Like,
yeah, definitely.
At some point you have to be like, okay, well, while this slows me down in tempo, like, I clearly am looking for very specific things as I'm playing throughout these games.
Right, and it's just particularly hard to curve, like, 1 into 4 without some kind of Scry. I mean, obviously, you're never going to curve 1 into 4 with a Scry because of the tap land. But I think that taking, you know, a turn of 1 mana off, like, so playing, like, 2 into 2 or whatever, or, like, 1-1 and then 3-4 or whatever, is just definitely worth the upside of the minor filtering.
One of the things that I noticed, and I don't know if you experienced this, it actually happened in the tournament yesterday, in addition to happening a few times kind of throughout my matches before the tournament, was just that I pretty often been playing my Temple of Triumph on 1 and then playing double 1-drop, rather than, you know, other options. However, it did happen once yesterday where instead I decided to raise the alarm. How do you contextualize what to do with the Temple of Triumph in your opening hand?
Well, I think in the scenarios where I have double 1-drop, assuming that I don't need to hit my like second land, I will just play the 1-drop on 1 and then play Temple and then another 1-drop on 2 because
right.
Just optimizing your damage. Obviously, you know, there's situations where that doesn't necessarily work, but...
Well, like, if you have a 3-drop specifically instead of a 2-drop, right? Like, you actually get the same amount of damage in a lot of those situations.
Well, if you're playing double 1 on 2, though, then, like...
Then you're missing 1.
Yeah, you can just play it up 1-1 and then
sure.
3.
Sure, that's a good point.
It's also worth noting that, like, you know, even if the Scry wasn't necessarily worth it, it would still be...
Needed for the deck.
Play the land, yeah, because you only have 2 dual lands.
Well, sure. The thought that the reason that I wanted to call it out is we have no Fabled Passage, considering we have, you know, 10 4 drops in the deck.
Right, yeah. I think Fabled Passage is often going to be the same card as Temple of Triumph, but without the Scry.
Right.
And it's also worth noting that, like, Fabled Passage isn't exactly a dual land, even though it does get you both colors, or either color, it doesn't get you both colors.
Which comes up, you know, when you look at the card Haxos in our deck, right? Like, that's a mana-intensive card, and so, you know, making sure that you have the appropriate mana for that certainly can come up, and did come up for me yesterday, even though I was playing a couple more Haxos. Well, let's talk about how you win really quick. I am not as good at drawing Winota as you. In fact, I think that I only had 2 Winotas in play throughout my tournament yesterday and still had a pretty good record, and still have a good record without drawing Winota. So, obviously, when you have Winota in play, the game usually ends if you get to go into your attack step. What is the reason for that?
I mean, Winota just is... I mean, it just attacks for, like, 40 with haste or whatever, so it's pretty obvious to see why you win the game when you draw Winota. I think that even when you don't draw Winota, Winota is still doing a lot more for you than you think it is, because... Your opponent has to respect it, right? I know people, you know, especially, you know, friends of the podcast or whatever, have said a lot of times we got a Splinter Twin situation on our hands, but it really does feel like that a lot with Winota. Like, your opponents will either get so scared of Winota that they just stop playing Magic, or they will not have a healthy respect for Winota, and then they'll just lose the game.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely accurate. I also think that, you know, the games where you don't have Winota are really interesting in this deck, because you have ways to just win the game, you know, the old-fashioned way. if you look at, I mean, we all know the power of Venerated Loxodon. You know, you have Lieutenant also is like, you know, a lot of value on a 4-mana creature. Haxos can just win the game by itself. And then you also just have your 3-drop slots in Legion Warboss and Tajik are just also two other creatures that, you know, win the game on their own a lot of the time. I mean, Tajik not so much on its own, but, you know, putting a really big amount of pressure on your opponent.
Yeah, I also think that this deck really benefits a lot from the specific removal spells and sweepers that the format has in it right now. Like, you're playing a lot of two bodies for one card, so the spot removal is not particularly good against you. And given that the primary sweeper is Extinction Event, and you have like such a skewed amount of mana costs, like even
Yeah.
just like Legion Warboss by itself actually is pretty good against Extinction Event.
Yeah, it's nice that like, you know, you can go Grim Initiate into Raise the Alarm into, you know, either Tajik or Legion Warboss, and they have a pretty tough decision, right? Like
Right.
they're like, okay, well, if I pick Odd, I'm still like, you know, taking three a turn, but if I don't pick Odd, I just die. And so
Yeah.
it's like, so now I'm picking Odd, I'm really far behind. I also had to tap out to do this, but also if I tap out, they have three creatures in play that are going to trigger Winota.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you have a hand like that, it's just the dream, right? Like if you manage to go like, you know, Grim Initiate or Selfless Savior into Raise the Alarm into Warboss or Tajik into Winota. Like, it's pretty hard to lose those games because your opponent has to deal with the board. And in order to deal with the board, they don't usually have clean answers. Like, the only one would really be Cry of the Carnarium.
Yeah.
So, like, you're almost definitely going to get Winota triggers at some point in a game that looks like that.
You know, one of the things that this deck has as far as, like, you'd say, like, oh, this deck's, you know, its only spell is Raise the Alarm. That's not really a spell, but you have four Selfless Spirits and four Tithe Taker in this deck. You know, you're really, and it means that you kind of talked about how this is, has an analogous of a combo deck, right?
Yeah.
And that can be true of lots of different types of aggro decks, but this deck does it in the way that traditional aggro does it, right? Where you're just curving out and putting a ton of pressure on your opponent.
Right.
And then also does it with Winota. And so Selfless Savior and Tithe Taker get to contribute to your game plan. You know, Selfless Savior is one that when it attacks, it triggers Winota. It also protects your Winota. And then Tithe Taker is when you can get off of your Winota. The token, if it dies, triggers Winota instead, and then also protects your Winota. I mean
Right.
it plays interaction in the form of things that favor the strategy you already have. And that by itself is just powerful, right? Like that's just how you want to build any type of Magic deck.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, we're obviously losing something by playing Boros instead of Mardu, like is traditional in this deck at the moment. Like, honestly, the place where I feel it the most isn't even in the enablers. Like, obviously, Woestrider is pretty good, but it's honestly on the payoffs. Like, Judith is actually a pretty good payoff.
Right.
And Hackdos is like, it is a good payoff sometimes.
Right.
But, you know, it's not a card that I'm excited to play. But I think that the Mardu deck's mana is just completely unplayable. So, like, if we had better mana, like, I don't even know what it would take. Like, Blackleaf Cliffs and you know, some of the other fast lands or whatever,
Sure.
then I would consider playing Mardu over this. But I don't think that you need the extra power level, especially on your Winotas. Like,
That would be my thought too, right? Like, you know, the number of times where I was like, okay, put Seasoned Hollowblade into play, put, you know, Lieutenant into play, and like those are the only two hits that I had. I was like, or you know, the third hit being another Winota, right? It's just
yeah.
like, okay, well, you know, I mean, all of a sudden I now have, you know, 14 attacking power that I didn't, or 12 attacking power that I didn't have before.
Yeah, it's not only is it dealing them a lot of damage, but it's also really hard to deal with, right? Like, I mean, a lot of these creatures have indestructible or the ability to save other creatures or you know, are just different CMCs in general, so like it ends up being hard to clear everything with an Extinction Event as well.
Yeah. So, we talked about how the deck wins. We talked about some of the key cards. You know, the Selfless Spirits, the Selfless Saviors, the Tithe Takers. You know, should we talk about Legion Warboss and kind of its very real importance in the deck?
Yeah, sure, we can talk about it.
I think that you mentioned the first part, right, which is Extinction Event. But also, it's really nice to have another card other than Winota that pressures them to make it. Like, yesterday, for me, the number of times where they killed my Legion Warboss because they had to, gave me the two times that I resolved Winota, both of them, they had just killed my Legion Warboss, and they pretty much lost the next turn.
Right.
I mean, that...
Yeah, it's a must-answer threat, and it kind of curves into Winota really nicely, right? Like, you make your opponent deal with this... main phase sometimes, you know, if it's Extinction Event or whatever.
Right.
And then, you know, you're able to slam the door shut with Winota. But yeah, I think just in general, it's nice to be able to have a card that will single-handedly take over the game if they don't deal with it. So it forces their hand a bit on what, you know, what they can actually, or how long they can wait. It's also worth noting that it is a red threat, which is really nice because it will sometimes bait out Aethergust out of their hand.
Right.
Whereas, like, some of your other threats, like Basari Lieutenant or whatever, won't actually help you resolve a Winota in the same way.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely true. The number of times where I'm like, well, I want to cast this Legion Warboss first, because if they have either Gust, I want them to Gust it.
Right.
That by itself is pretty big game. The other key card that I want to talk about is actually Haxos. Haxos? Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So, this card was either extremely impressive to me, or not very good.
Sure.
And that's kind of the nature of the RNG on the card. But also, it is a really good Winota hit.
Right. Yeah, I've honestly found it to be really good a lot more than not. The only times that I really don't like it is when I already have all even cards in play, and I'm trying to establish more pressure before Winota.
Sure.
Like, the fact that it does just, like, play into Extinction Event pretty badly compared to some of the other threats in the deck is the one downside, I think. But it also wins you games that you could not possibly win with any other card.
Yeah. That's the part that's been impressive to me about it, is just, like, okay, well, if this hits the right number, my opponent actually can't win this game.
Right. Yeah, I've definitely had games where my opponents would be, like, at 11 or whatever with a...
It does...
Or at, like, 8 with a Elder... whatever the 5-mana 6/6 is, and like a Nissa in play or whatever, and you know, like a couple of other creatures, and I'm just like, well, I just definitely couldn't win this game unless I had a, you know, protection from everything creature in play.
Yeah, Haxos is one that, I mean, when it's doing like broken True Name Nemesis impressions, you're like, yeah, baby, let's go.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the sideboard. I think we've talked, you know, well, I guess the thing that we should also mention is the resiliency before we move on. You know, we mentioned what Legion Warboss does for that. You know, Selfless Savior and Grim Initiate add to that resiliency. And then Season Hollowblade and Tithe Taker kind of, I mean, if you just think of how many cards I just mentioned, plus, you know, Lieutenant, right? Like, the number of cards I just mentioned that are adding to the fact that it's actually really hard to keep creatures off your side of the board... is really impressive. Like, that is...
It's not even to mention, like, Raise the Alarm, which is the instant speed, so it doesn't really play into Wraths a lot.
Right.
Especially if you're trying to set up a Winota. And also, it's two bodies, so, like, it's hard to spot removal it away as well.
Yeah. The deck just does a really good job of always having creatures in play. And that is... I mean, that's great. Like, there's not a lot of decks that I think I've played that have this much resiliency to removal. And when you look at the way that... you know, things like Soltai are constructed, or Blue White Control, or Esper are constructed, it's just like, you cannot keep up with this.
Yeah, what's crazy is you just, basically with Winota in the deck too, you just always have outs, even on, like, the craziest circumstances. Like, I've had mulligans to four where my opponent cast four removal spells, two discard spells that both hit, two counter spells, and a Wrath, and they still, like, would have lost the game if I had drawn Winota on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even yesterday, you know, I'm playing for the invite, you know, for the 4-0 in that SCG, and I'm playing against what I think is a pretty bad matchup for this deck. You know, and I'm just like, well, if I draw Winota this turn, they probably lose. And, like, I said that for multiple turns when they had like 14 mana.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Well, Winota, you busted. You busted. Let's talk about sideboard, and I just want to call out something. It is not very often that I pick up somebody's sideboard and I love it. But I actually really love this sideboard. I have boarded in every single one of these cards, but some of them in multiple matchups. I've been impressed by the cards that I questioned originally. So we have, really quick, we have two Giant Killer, three Red Cap Melee, two Devout Decree, two Chandra's Pyro Helix. Matt, you're speaking to my heart here with that one. Two Embereth Shieldbreaker, two Scorching Dragonfire, and two Chandra Acolyte of Flame. So the key cards that I want to call out that are my favorite inclusions are, I mean, obviously Pyro Helix because it's close to my heart, but, well, that's besides the point. But Chandra Acolyte of Flame and Giant Killer have been really, really good for me. Giant Killer has come in way more spots than I expected. You know, I've used both sides of the card quite a bit. And Chandra is something that you get a board in, and the, you know, you get to change the game, the type of things that your opponent can be doing, pressure certain types of spells out of their hand, you know, make yourself once again more resilient, have insane, insane Winota turns. The sideboard does this really good thing, and this is kind of a certain type of sideboard that I really like. You know, you see all these two ofs and the three ofs, and what you're doing in this type of sideboard specifically is you're like, okay, here's the matchup that I'm in, here are the cards that are the worst, here's how I streamline my deck against this deck to, you know, make my deck's game plan work more often. I mean, even something like Chandra's Pyro Helix does that exact thing. It's like, I'm very specifically trying to clear the way and get rid of one toughness creatures that can stop some of my board. And that is, the sideboard is like, you know, all of them are very precision tools because you can't adjust your deck. It's not like you're going to board in 14 cards in any matchup.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, overboarding is a real thing with a deck like this. I mean, 2 to 3 cards usually, right?
Right. I mean, you're going to board in Red Cap Melee and Chandra's Phoenix against, or Chandra's Pyro Helix and maybe Scorching Dragonfire against Mono Red, and that would be like
by far the matchup you're going to board the most cards in.
Right. And it's already a good matchup. You just happen to have a lot of, you know, a lot of cards for the matchup. It's not like it's like Chandra's Pyro Helix is going to come in against more decks. Scorching Dragonfire is going to come in against more decks. Right? It's not like you're all of a sudden, you know, you don't have too many cyborg cards for the match. It just happens to be a good matchup where you have Red Cap Melee for other stuff. And because of that, you know, you end up with a lot of cyborg cards. And almost every other matchup, you're boarding in, you know, two to five cards.
Right. Yeah, I mean, honestly, Red Cap Melee is mostly for the mirror. That's why that one gets the inclusion.
Right. I mean, you need to be able to kill Winota.
Right. And being able to do it for one mana is just,
yeah,
you know, it's just completely necessary in a match like that where you have to contest the board the whole time.
So let's talk about Sultai. It's the best deck, and I think we should just give people a guide for it. And I also don't think that we've been boarding the same way. And you know, I love to talk about that for the listeners. It's going to be the deck that they're going to play against the most. And I think that giving them an actual guide on how to sideboard and have a discussion between us is going to give them the best results. So originally, I was boarding in two Giant Killer and two Chandra Acolyte of Flame. We actually changed the main deck a little bit of this deck. There used to be four Venerated Loxodon and four Seasoned Hollowblade and three Hactos, and now we have the Tithe-Takers. I was boarding out a Hactos, a Venerated Loxodon, and I think two Grim Initiates. You were not approaching that sideboarding the same, and you said the only card you were bringing in was Chandra?
Yeah, I don't think that you need the Giant Killers. Like, I mean, occasionally they'll have the 6 mana, or the 5 mana 6/6, but honestly, even when they're capping out for that, most of the time you can just win the game with Winota, or, you know, just by going wide around it.
Sure. And so you were just boarding out the two Venerated Loxodons for two Chandras, correct?
Yeah, that's where I was at. Venerated Loxodon is the worst card in the matchup by a pretty good margin because it plays into their Wraths. Like, it's your worst card in the deck against Extinction Event by a lot, because the hands where you're able to cast Venerated Loxodon early are almost always going to be multiple one drops. And it also makes you skip an attack step, so it like pressures their life total a lot less than you would think it would.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the reasons, for what it's worth, that I liked Giant Killer over Grim Initiate, is that they're picking odds so often in the matchup that Grim Initiate's trigger doesn't happen. So I, you know, while it is as a resilient threat, like, you know, just being able to kill a large creature for me has been better. And I would continue to board that, like, a similar way. I think that I would board out all three Venerated Loxodons. I think that throughout the time my time playing the deck, I've come to agree with you that it's... I mean, it just, if you think about it, what Matt said is true, right? Like, you have to have a bunch of one drops, and then you have to play Venerated Loxodon with a bunch of one drops. And so it's like, they just Extinction Event, and nothing you did mattered.
I mean, I could be talked into just playing one Giant Killer over the last Venerated Loxodon, but I just don't think that, I mean, you're almost never going to have a target for it, so it's just going to end up being a 1-1 for one 85% of the time, which is, like, maybe better than the Loxodon still, but...
So it's 1-2, but I also, I have never not had a target for it, for what it's worth. Like, you're going
to... What are you trying to kill with it?
Krasis and
a lot of the decks aren't even playing Krasis.
I have not had that experience. Most of them are still playing 2 Krasis in my games, but... That's fair. And that's why I wanted to have the discussion, too, right? It's like...
Enough targets for that.
Yeah. And if you're not seeing enough targets for it, like, then don't board it in, right? Like... I'm just saying what my experience has been, and I typically am boarding it in after I've already seen the cards that my opponent has been playing. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean it's always, you know, a great assault with sideboarding. Like there's no hard and fast rules. Like if you see something that makes you want to sideboard a certain way, that's reasonable.
Yeah, well, I'm glad we had the discussion. It's interesting to hear that you haven't been seeing as much Krasis as I have too. I think that the Sultai deck that I played against in the SCG was also playing Krasis yesterday. So I knew that too. So I don't know. I just haven't had that experience, and it's good to get to talk about like certain things. I want to talk about Ember Shieldbreaker. I thought you were crazy for putting this in, Matt. And then, I played against Lucky Clover, and I'm quite sure you have to have this card.
Yeah, I agree. You just almost never go on to beat the card, Lucky Clover. So
does it make you want to like cut the... Does it make you want to cut the like a Scorching Dragonfire and play more of it?
I don't think you can overload on that kind of effect, because the problem that you have is that it's pretty awkward if your opponent just doesn't play Clover on 2 or whatever.
Like, right.
They're going to have to most of the time, but if they don't, I mean, you're pretty much forced to just play it as a 2-1. Like, there's no way that you can just...
Hold it.
Yeah, hold it indefinitely.
It's true. In this deck, you can't just hold it. I completely agree. It's hard. It's one of those things where it's like... You know, I can't beat this card, but I can't play mono shield breakers. So let's talk about matchups before we wrap up. So obviously I think that the control decks, Sultai, blue white style decks, that would include, you know, all of the blue white style decks, very good matchups for you.
Oh yeah, I've also played a couple of times against the Doom Foretold Yorion deck, and that matchup is a joke.
Yeah. I include all the Yorion decks under, I mean, I guess unless it's, you know, Elemental Yorion, I think they're all basically control decks still. Mono Red, one of the more popular decks, quite a good matchup for you, I think. You're bigger than them, you're more resilient than them, you have a great sideboard for them, pretty good. I have not played against Stompy with this deck, Matt.
I think the Stompy matchup is really close. It's a matchup you would think would be a buy, but it's actually...
I played the other side against other Winota decks, and my experience has been mostly positive with Mono Green in that. But usually, if they draw Winota, I lose.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. Like, I mean, you have a little bit more play than that. Like, you can definitely win the game with a bunch of Basari Lieutenants as well, but...
Sure, okay. I mean, it is one of those matchups where Loxodon Smiter is... Venerated Loxodon is really good.
Yeah, I mean, Grim Initiate is also actually really good, because you can get some counters on it, and then it just starts, like, first striking their guys, or if you just have multiples of them. Also, Seizing Hollowblade was really strong in that matchup.
Yeah, I have not played against a bunch of Seizing Hollowblades, and, you know, one of the things that I really liked about that card is just it puts pressure on your opponent, and it's just impossible for certain types of decks to deal with, and mono green would certainly fall into that. Team Elementals, I have played against with this deck. I found this deck to actually be quite favored against that. I don't know what your experience has been.
I think it actually depends, because I don't think that you're very good at stopping them from doing what they're doing. So, like, again, if you just draw, like, a busted Winota draw, they can't really interact with you, so...
Yeah, it's so another matchup where... It's another matchup where Season Hollowblade was quite good for me. And, you know, one of the... Surprisingly, the Legion Warboss felt kind of slow. Mm-hmm. Like, I almost would rather draw Tadric in that matchup. I don't know if you had similar experiences.
Well, so what was interesting for me... is that I felt like the matchup would be insanely good if you're playing against a list that's not playing any of the 5-mana dragon.
Sure, Terror of the Peaks.
Yeah, because I played a game where my opponent had cast, like, multiple Genesis Ultimatums or whatever, and just, I mean, they had a huge board, but I had a huge board, too. And, like, well, I was like, well, I can just keep blocking, and, like, I have Basari Lieutenants in play, so if I block, I'm going to get more guys every
right.
turn, you know, instead of less.
And then Terror of the Peaks came down off of an ultimatum, and...
Well, yeah. Basically, I was like, well, I'm just inevitably going to win this game because I'll just draw Winota, right? And then, you know, there's no way that they can block all this. But it turned out that they eventually played Terror of the Peaks and then just, you know, I took 20 in one turn.
Yeah, I think you have to win before they can do that kind of stuff. And that also means that, like, you can't let them get a ton of value. You have to aggressively attack into things like Risen Reef and, you know, hope that they don't get to do that. So I can see that.
You're obviously always attacking into Risen Reef, playing any deck almost.
Yeah, that's true.
They're also just not going to block. Yeah. They have to.
Is it Tempo is one that I have not lost to yet. It's been a pretty insane matchup. The caveat to that is that if they draw lots of unsummons.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Unsummon and the Riddle form are specifically the cards you don't want to play against.
Yep. I want to talk really quickly about the bad matchups, though, because I think we're under the agreement that the Team Adventures deck, you know, the second most popular deck while Sultai Control makes up 35% of the metagame, which is quite a bit and a really good reason to play this deck, the second most popular deck is Team Adventures, and you do have a bad matchup there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Teamer Adventures is by far your worst matchup.
Yeah. Talk to me really quickly about Teamer Flash, though. I think that, you know, or maybe All Flash. It's possible that it's All Flash, but Teamer specifically for me is one that, you know, I think is something to think about. Where do you sit on, you know, just Night Pack Ambusher plus early interaction in the matchup?
Yeah, I don't think the matchup's very good. I think that, honestly, you probably have a better shot against Teamer Flash, only because it might trick your opponent into thinking that the Wraths are a lot better against you than they are. Like, they maybe keep a sketchy hand with Flame Sweep or...
Sure.
You know, some amount of removal. But yeah, I mean, just Simic Flash or whatever, they pretty much know what their game plan is. Try to counter everything as early as possible and then resolve a Night Pack Ambusher and... It's
so
really hard to beat that.
Yeah, I think that understanding what counterspells your opponent could be playing, and then sequencing accordingly is really important against the Flash decks. Whereas with the Teamer Adventure deck, it's like they don't even care. Like, they're just gonna bounce and kill all of your stuff, and bounce just is so good against this deck.
You're almost 0% to beat Lucky Clover Brazen Borrower.
Yeah. So, with that being said, you have a pretty good matchup spread with this deck. You're against the best deck in the format. You're heavily favored. You know, you're 50-50 against the third and fourth best deck. And then outside of that, you've got two pretty bad matchups and a bunch of really good ones that are all trying to prey on the best deck.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I'm probably overstating how bad these matchups actually are. Like, it's really hard to have, like, a 20% matchup or whatever when you're playing Winota, because sometimes
right.
you just, you know, they just don't have it, and then they lose the game.
Yeah, I think that it's fair to say that, you know, the Flash deck and the Adventures deck are your bad matchups. You've got a couple 50-50s in Elementals and Mono Green, and then mostly good outside of that.
Right.
I also just like being the aggro deck that's favored in the aggro mirror, for what it's worth. I don't know if other people feel that way, but for me, it just gives me some confidence going into a tournament to know that, like, if we're going to try and play this style of game, I like to be the deck that just is naturally favored in those moments.
Yeah. I mean, I prefer to have as many favorable matchups as possible, honestly, but...
Yeah.
I mean, the hope is that your bad matchups are all of Sultai's good matchups, is really the thought there. And
right.
Sultai being the most popular deck, like, if you make it deep into a winner's bracket run, you're probably not going to play against a lot of your bad matchups.
Yep. Well, that is going to do it for this week's Deck Tech. Leave a comment. Let us know what you thought. Let us know if you have any questions. Thank you so much, Matt, for joining me this week. It was,
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It was like old times, only very specific. It was very fun. I very much enjoyed this conversation. And, I'm happy. You get right back into Magic Hit Mythic in 2 days, Matt. You're such a monster. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. If you're listening on the network, thank you so much for watching. Hit that like button. Smash that subscribe button. If you have a good meme about Mason Clark, post it in the comments. So that I can read it, because it just would make me happy. That's it. There's no contest or anything. I just like seeing people talk about Mason. Thank you, everybody, so much, and have a great rest of your day. And we'll see you guys next time on the Constructor Criticism YouTube channel.